What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We are a women's professional golf podcast concentrating and talking to everything relevant in women's professional golf and the LPGA Tour. I'm your co-host, Casey Johnson, 13-year PGA of Canada member who now walks inside the ropes and carrying a bag on the LPGA Tour as a caddy. I am joined by my good buddy, Captain Ron Dunn, master jack of all trades out there, super stroke rep, putting arc rep, baggage carrier, Golf Channel and analyst, makes an excellent grilled cheese sandwich too. We are just super appreciative of you guys and listening to this and sharing it amongst your friends. The outreach has been great, and we'd hopefully just assume you keep doing that. If you're liking our content, we appreciate you. We are at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms. And just continue to go ahead, send us a comment, send us a share, a like, send it to a friend. And we're just going to keep pushing out this this content as long as we're out here, as long as we're inside the ropes, and as long as there's golf tournaments happening. So once again, we appreciate you. We are at Let's Talk Divots. And let's jump into the show. Ronnie, what's going on, brother?
Oh, man, feeling good today. We're in beautiful Greensboro. Are we still in Greensboro, Georgia? Right on the outskirts.
Lake Oconee.
Lake Oconee?
Yeah, I don't know.
Lake Oconee, Reynolds Lake Oconee Championship, the drive-on championship. What a beautiful day. It did rain a little bit. A little sprinkle here, a little sprinkle there.
I was looking for the rainbow.
Yeah, no rainbow here, but a lot of humidity. I'm fired up about our show. We got a good guest here, a good friend of mine, and new friend of mine, I must say, a good storyteller. He's going to tell us a lot. He's been around a long time, so we're going to sit back. We're going to let him introduce himself, but I will let you know that we are in the house and right here at beautiful drive-on and looking forward to a good week of competition here.
Who we got in the house? Jeff, why don't you say what's up? I can't even pronounce your left name. DeCohen?
Jeff DeCohen.
Very good. Yeah, I'm Jeff DeCohen. First off, I want to thank you, gentlemen, for what you're doing. This is something that over the years, you know, the media has really kind of, you know, like, who's the LPGA? But right, to have right. a show like this, to be able to promote it the way, you know, I mean, this is what... Going way back years and years ago, back in the 70s and stuff. You know,
ladies get no respect out here, and we're trying to make it come to the forefront.
This is the thing.
Unscripted, too, and one of the things is, like, if you come on our show, it's like, you know, when the players, and it doesn't matter what sport it is, they go into the media outlet, and it's just like, this is what's so great about podcasting is, like, any, you know, Ron and I are just two average guys doing our own show, broadcasting on the internet, but we can ask the hard questions where, you know, you come in after your round, and Lexi's like, you know, how to go out there? Lexi, oh, you know, kept really
politically correct,
collect really positive out there, you know, had a lot of good chances, just going to stay patient, you know.
No, I love it. I mean, and it's so funny you should say that, because I remember years ago I had the good fortune of caddying for Galvin and him and Charlotta Sorenstam.
I've heard that name before.
You know, I mean, that name, it's the other
synonymous
one.
With it's LPGA synonymous. It's okay.
Yeah, and it's, I mean,
she's a winner. Great, she's
yeah.
a winner.
She went on tour. She,
yeah,
did.
She did.
Great gal. But I remember we were at Corning, and it was the first round. And she just got in the zone. And
what
I mean,
year was
she
this?
And I was, oh God, the year was probably 81, 82.
When did you get started on tour?
I actually started on tour part-time in 1975, and then in 1978.
With the ladies or the men?
I've always been with the ladies.
Really?
Yep. I mean, they're nice to look at. Come on,
guys. That's why we're here, baby.
75, I'm doing the math.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. 1978.
I was in eighth grade.
1978, I graduated from college.
Okay. All right.
So my, like, 45th anniversary is coming up from college. So there you
well,
go.
Well, we just watched a documentary on the Golf Channel last night about the loopers. I can't remember the title.
Golf Stories.
A looper's story. And they were, you know, you found bags in the parking lot, and they were 16 years old. They weren't necessarily helping, you know.
You're still finding bags in the parking lot today.
That was just a job that a young person could, like, show up and do, right?
Well, it was funny because, I mean, this is back. I mean, how did I get into this field? I was, like, 9 years old. I'm originally from Massachusetts, and I had the good fortune of a country club there, Neshottuck Country Club in Concord, Massachusetts. Well, you know, I went out there on a Saturday, and I'm sitting on the bench like everybody, you know, just like Caddyshack, you know, you sit on the bench.
How old were you here?
I was 9 years old.
Wow.
But I was tall.
Big 9 year old.
Yeah. And the assistant pro came out and said, hey, the pro's coming in. He's going to go to the range. He needs somebody to shag balls. This is when you used to go out there and actually pick up balls and put them into a shag bag. Mm. So everybody's scattered, and I'm just sitting there, and he comes out and he goes, you come with me. I went, okay, fine. You know, 9 years old.
Nice.
9 years later.
A That's slave labor nowadays.
Yeah. But 9 years later, I was still doing the same thing.
Shagging balls?
Shagging balls and caddy. And this guy turned out to be a fantastic golfer. He won the Mass Open. He took me all over the place. And, you know, I'm just throwing it back on my shoulder, and, you know.
Loyalty was big then.
Yeah, that 25 cents was great.
You know? That was too. Great.
But, I mean, the funny thing is he's there like, okay, now I got to go into the pro shop and do some work. You sit at the pool, and I'll come and get you when I'm ready to go. And they're like, this is pretty good. You know, I get membership to this
project. Country Club Living.
And I'm there like, it was great. So, but that got me going, and then I got in. But the thing with Charlotta, like you were saying, you know, she just got in the zone and played. And we shot like 9 under the first day. And, you know, we're in the lead. All the reporters come up to her and say, hey, you know, tell me about your round. She looked at the reporters and said, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know how I did it. If you want to know, talk to my caddy. And I'm there like, thank you.
So very nice,
like,
yeah.
You know, I'm there like, hey. We just
caddies got recognized back in the day, you know, as helping out a lot. Nowadays, they kind of not so much. But you know, they do a lot of work out there.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it was a thing. And the different tournaments that are out there, too, back in the days, it was really, it was fantastic. It was a family.
You know, yeah.
I mean, loyalty. You got with somebody. Yeah, loyalty was a big thing. I mean, you got with somebody. I was good fortune of, in the 30-plus years that I was out on the LPGA, I had 3 players that I worked with.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was like you stayed with them. And it was like, you know, the first person I had wanted to go into coaching. And we talked after, as a matter of fact, we talked after a tournament. You know, she says, hey, I got to meet you up in a parking lot. And I thought, okay, well, I'm getting fired. You know, it's like, but she was a sweetheart. I mean, she was a great gal. She goes, look, I have an opportunity to go coaching. What can you tell me? And I looked at her and I said, you know, I said, you are an absolute fantastic player. You know the game. I said, go coach. She did. She ended up in the Hall of Fame for coaching. So I'm there like, okay, good move.
So, Jeff, you say you're, you know, 30-plus years on the LPGA with those, you know, 3 players. You just don't really see that out here. I'm a pretty new caddy, and I've just been actually dumbfounded. We've spoke about it a lot on this podcast, just about how much it changes seats. And like, so why do you think nowadays it's a bit of a revolving door? And how much do you think would be emphasized if they, you know, seem to place a little bit more emphasis on the relationship, caddy-player relationship, kind of like, because there's a much longer shelf life on the men's tour.
You hit it right on the head. I mean, it's they look at it from a totally different perspective now than they did back then. I mean, it's like, I've got to perform. Well, you know, you perform as a team. And if you get somebody, I mean, you know, over the years, I knew my player better than her sister. You know, I mean, it was like, it was unbelievable. But yeah, now you're starting to see the revolving door, and it doesn't mean anything. And then, you know, the sad aspect of it is the motivation of a caddy just says, well, you know I'm going to get fired. You know, I can win and get fired. And they're like, I'm not going to, you know, go do this.
Something I hear out here is, yeah, just be nice when you fire me, you know, as the quote, right? Like, it's kind of inevitable. And that's like, yeah, that's a tough thing to kind of get out of bed for. And it's just something that I've noticed around here, and I'm a little bit shocked at. I think if that attitude was embodied a little bit different, like, you know, if you're not going to work as a team, then how can you, you know, it's mandatory to have a caddy outside of 2020 with the COVID,
correct.
Right?
So no, you're correct.
You know, absolutely mandatory. So I feel like that's the attitude that like that you should have, you know?
Well, you know, and back in the day we had fun. I mean, it was just like the thing they would have, you know, there was one tournament that was so funny that it was in Youngstown, Ohio, but it was a great tournament. And what they would do is on a Monday after the event, we had a caddy event. They literally set the course up like the final Sunday of the LPGA, and all the caddies went out and played. We had a ball because the players are coming out saying, okay, you know, you want a caddy for me now?
Exactly, carry my bag.
Carry my bag, you know? So, I mean, that went on. But it was funny, too, because that same tournament, the caddy masters there were fantastic. And what they did for us was we had 2 tents, one with all the bibs in it, but the other tent was a dining tent. And he would get restaurants to come in and cater and give us tremendous meals. And the players are walking by and they're looking at it. We're eating steak, lasagna, and all this. They're getting cold cuts and, you know, salad. So we put up a sign out front saying, caddies only, no players.
I think back in the day, the caddy master was in charge. He took care of the caddies. He was the man.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, it was so funny that he would do that, you know, that they did that. And it was like, you know, and then, of course, Corning, we always had a caddy tournament on Monday that the play, but you know, now it's like Monday you're going to be at the course because the player's got to be there and they're going to play all the time. But back in the day, it used to be, we would do stuff on Monday. We would have a lot of fun. But, you know, Corning always put on a tournament for us. Youngstown, Ohio put on a tournament for us.
Jamie Farr, did he do you guys right?
Jamie Farr was fantastic.
He's the best.
I mean, Jamie Farr was absolutely fantastic. And
he loves the LPGA.
Oh, he absolutely adored us. But he, you know, he would bring in these celebrities, and it was so funny. I mean, sitting there, I mean, I had the good fortune of being in a group with Artie Johnson from the old Laughing days.
Sure.
You know, and he's hiding behind a bush.
I remember Artie. Casey doesn't even know who Laughing is.
No, yeah. Well, sorry.
I don't even have internet service. I can't Google that.
But, I mean, Artie Johnson was
sure,
there.
Sure.
He hid behind a pine tree. You know, Jamie took a swing, and he comes out. Very interesting.
Please.
You still stink. You know, it's like, you know, I'm there like, Jesus, Jamie, you're great, you know. And then, you know, I had the good fortune of meeting him, and he was just, he's a tremendous guy, a tremendous ambassador for the LPGA. But it was really funny because after I met him, like a couple years, I was at the, I still call it Nabisco, Dinosaur, which is the ANA. Just like I call it Jamie Farr.
Yes,
you know, just
yes.
Like I say
you
Jamie
too.
Farr. But I had the good
Toledo.
Fortune. Yeah, I had the good fortune of he was in our pro-am group. Well, his first shot he hit, it went to the right, and there were people down there. So I just yelled, four right, four right. You know, watch out. So I step back, and Jamie comes up to me, and he goes, Jeff, you know, if you really want to get your voice to really come out, you got to really project it from down in your gut and really let your voice be heard. I turned around and looked him right in the face and said, Jamie, I don't say four right that much. Of course, we're in a crowd.
I'm new to this.
Yeah, he's in a, you know, I'm in a crowd, and they lost, and Jamie just goes, okay, you got me. You know, but he was tremendous.
That's
he was
great.
So, tremendous.
So you've been out there all that long, and did you have to have a side, like, again, going back to this documentary is just so fresh in my mind that we watched last night, and, you know, I know that, you know, firsthand that it can be, even in 2020, you know, like week to week, paycheck to paycheck, if you're missing cuts, like, what, you know, and this is women's sport we're talking here, right? Like, what was it like? And they were saying it was like that on the men's tour until, you know, like the 90s. So like, what was that like, grinding out a paycheck week to week back in the 70s and 80s in women's golf?
You know, it was so funny. There's a company that's still out here, Callaway. They were tremendous impact on the LPGA. They had, you know, 3/4 of the players were sponsored by Callaway. And back then, what Callaway did is they came up to the caddies and said, well, you're part of our team. So they would give us, I still have a Callaway jacket and a Callaway rain suit that they gave us. And if you placed in the top 50, they would give you a check.
Wow.
So that was back then. I mean, you know, the caddies were going out saying, this is great. You know, here's a company, golf company coming in, and they're giving us checks for performance and all that.
Was it standard 10% for you guys? Now it's usually like 5, 7, 10?
Yeah, you know, back then, once again, the longevity of it and the family of it, because you're part of the team, that pretty much.
Yeah, they didn't break it down back then to 5, 7, 10.
They just said, you know what, here's your salary. We're going to give you this. We're going to look out for this. But there again, too, is that, and we can come back to this, the hotels that we stayed at were great. I mean, you know, for us, they were very good. I mean, there was one in Corning, New York that we'd go to all the time, and the owners threw us a party.
They're probably the same hotels without any renovation. That's probably how old it's been.
It's still there, but it was great because it was right on the fourth hole. As a matter of fact, we were supposed to do a Legends event up there, and I asked if this place was still there, and they go, yep, still standing. But, I mean, these people, when we came there, we'd take the whole hotel. I mean, that was the thing. It was just a single unit, but it was right off the fourth hole of the course. So we'd park our car and never have to drive because we could just walk over to the tee. But we were right there, and they threw us a party. Every year they would have a nice barbecue for us, and, you know, we loved them.
What about the camaraderie between caddies? You guys travel together, sleep in a room together, four guys in a room like here?
Actually, five guys in a room. You know, if you shot the worst round of the day, you got the bathtub.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it was like,
if you won the tournament, they picked up the tab.
That's where, I mean, it was always like that. So it's like, you know, if you win the tournament the next week, whoever your roommate was is saying, here you go. You know,
anybody traveling RVs or anything like that?
Oh, back then we used to have, there was probably about a half a dozen players and probably about four or five caddies that had RVs, and they would go to, you know, they'd find an RV park and just have a blast. And
yeah, the men do it on the West Coast swing here. They get right. quite a few together. John Daly, I think, started it. Davis Love got in there with his kids, and they have a little camp out where they six RVs pulled all around, a big campfire. The kids are playing.
Correct.
It's a really good thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, the camaraderie there, and they would always say, okay, who's going to book next week? You know, who's doing this? So, I mean, it was like a family. I mean, it was like a traveling family. But back then, you know, you're talking about in the 70s and all that stuff, it was the LPGA was really trying to market itself. We got a tremendous commissioner right now, but the commissioner back then, Mr. Charlie Meacham, was fantastic. But he went up to some of the players and just said, hey, this is how we're going to market. And, of course, he talked to, like, Jan Stevenson.
Sure.
She was out there. You know, the old Max Fly commercial of her.
78, 79, Jan Stevenson, they put her as a poster child for the LPGA because she was beautiful.
You're exactly right.
Laura Ball right there with her.
Right there with her. And I've had the excellent opportunity of working with Jan. So, you know, we would relate to all the old stories. But, you know, she was telling me about how it was back then. And she hit it right on the head. And then, of course.
Yeah, Mike Wan's done a great job, though, with the LPGA. 2020, this has been a very, very tough year. But he's managed to get this, like, drive-on tournament we have right now. This is just they pulled it out of the thin air and just made it for the girls. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, drive-on. I mean, both events that they did. And it's so funny because my player that I'm working with now, Sweetheart, but she was saying, my gosh, you know, wish drive-on would do all the tournaments because of the golf courses we're playing. Mm. I mean,
well, this is a very interesting golf course. Nobody's even seen this one, so it's going to be very interesting what the scores are after this one.
And how many women saw Inverness?
Not very many.
You know, I mean, it was, you're looking at Inverness, and then you're looking at this Jack Nicklaus design out here just outside of Greensboro. I think it's Edmonton or something like that.
Not Canada. No,
right.
Edmonton,
we call that the asshole of Alberta. But
what's
the sum of the big differences, like, from the past to now, like, other than the scale of everything, the money, the more business-like?
You know, one of the things that I really saw back then was it was a domestic. Because we started in January,
sure.
And we never
left the country.
Well, we went to Canada. Thank God for Canada.
That's
thank God for Canada.
Hardly leaving the country.
Because we had a tournament called Demure that we used to go. We used to go to Canada all the time, and that was, you know. And then of course we'd go over to. It was great because we'd go and play Hawaii, but we'd always do it during the Pro Bowl.
Oh yeah.
So it was
that's
like
a good week.
It was great. You know, I mean, it was fantastic, but it was, you know, we would start out in January down in Florida, play, you know, 2-3 events down in Florida, and then go over to the Hawaii, and then come back, and just, we would stay in the domestic United States, but it was like 23, 24 full field events.
That's why you'd been able to do the RV life back then, too. Like, Ron and I found out firsthand, you know, I drove an RV last year. That's how Ron and I met. And, you know, he's in an RV this year. And just like, you know, you can kind of handle the West Coast swing. But once you start crossing continents, you know, for 1 week here and 2 weeks there and the price of gas. And, you know, I think it offsets itself to some degree. But, you know, 40 hours behind a wheel is a little bit tough on people mentally as well.
And you hit it right on the head. But, I mean, that was the thing. See, back then. You know, when you had 23, 24, 25 domestic events, you know, the girls would play.
You were around when Sayre Pock came out?
Yes, I was. As a matter of fact, I remember when she first won her very first event, and she was the one that really kind of set the bar as far as, you know, how to understand the culture that you're coming into. And what I mean by culture is how to speak English.
Oh, yeah, like 5 years ago, LPGA demanded that everybody learn English. The ladies out here had to. Yeah, it was mandatory that they had to be able to do a press conference.
Because it was so funny because like when Sayre won, she was just trying to speak, and her caddy kind of stepped in. Great guy. He stepped in and said, hey, look, you know, I'll answer the but you hit it right on the head. You hit it right on the head. I mean, it was like there. And then I remember an event that we did in Vegas. And it was a pro-am. I'm caddying for Charlotta Sorenstam.
How long are we with Carlotta?
I was with her for 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
But it was out in Vegas, and it was a Monday or Tuesday pro-am or whatever it was. But it was an all-Korean pro-am, and one person had to speak in English. And we looked at each other and said, well, this is going to be fun. 6 hours on a golf course with nobody that understands English.
Wow.
But, you know, we went out.
Well, Sayre changed the face of golf for the LPGA.
She did. I mean, I think that on that scale, at that time, she did. And, of course, you can go back to just one name, Nancy.
Sure.
You know, she changed it back in the 70s when she came out. It was like unbelievable on, you know, what she was able to do with it. But, and then, you know, I mean, it's so funny because the interaction of the players was something. I mean, I still remember Big Mama.
Oh, man, I got a good Big Mama story back at the U.S. Seniors Open last year. Ryan Smith, friend of the pod, caddied for her. Yep. Big Mama.
Well,
at the U.S.
People
Senior
for don't
Open.
Know Big Mama, can you let them in?
No, you're gonna know way more than I can because I just learned last year at the U.S. Open. But Jan Karner, she's a friggin' legend.
Close,
right?
Close, not Jan. Joanne.
Joanne. There you go.
Joanne Karner.
And that's fine. Yeah, Big Mama. I had no idea. I was end up Googling her, and he's like, I don't care what happens this week. I just got to caddy for Big Mama, and she's out there. She's like 80, still smoking darts on the range. It's just,
I mean, and see, it is so funny because I remember we had a couple of what we call legends come out, and they would walk out on the range and just look down the range. And it's like, they'd come up and they go, you know, Jeff, this isn't the same.
Don't recognize anybody.
Well, no, it isn't. They're all just like machines. Whereas in the past, you know, you would go out on the practice range and they would be talking across the range saying, what did you do last night? Oh, what's going on?
It's all business now. There's too much money. It's all about winning. It's the tiger mentality, right? Yeah. It's just like in the zone, you know, crush everybody. Here's our little bubble. But, especially the new breed coming up, right? And then you toss in all those English second language, Korean gals and stuff. Yeah. I think it's tough to have a bit of a, you know, mesh.
And like you said, I mean, I was at the first women's senior open and the second one as well. But, you know, you go out on the range there. They're still doing it.
Sure.
They're still cracking up each other. And, you know, you're walking off the range over to the first tee, still laughing. You know, it's like, Jesus, that was great. You know, I mean, it was like, it's so funny.
Well, I love seeing Julie Inkster still out here. Here this week.
Trip, yep. She's
love it.
Yep. I mean, it's so funny.
Dame Laura Davies still shows up. She was there in Atlantic City.
She comes out every now and then and does that.
I think it comes with a bit of maturity though too, right? Like you'll see, you know, the old, you know, friend of the pod, Christy McPherson, or those women out there are just much more like smelling the roses, where you know you get the young superstars and it is a bit more like they're hungry,
it's business,
you know, they haven't figured out that, you know, they you know, oh man, I'm a little later on in my career. Even like the Tiger Woods is now, you know, embodied that, becoming buddies with everybody instead of just trying to squash everybody, because, you know, trying to just enjoy, maybe have some friends when he gets to the later stages in the game instead of, you know, being like, well, that guy was kind of a, you know,
partner. And that's the thing too, you know, I mean, one of the nicest things that you think about is when we had pro-ams, you know, the nicest thing would be at the end of a pro-am, the amateurs coming up saying thank you very much and all that, and then the next year they search you out and say, hey, I remember your player, you know, and it's like,
it's a big deal for a pro-am, the players, the amateurs that play with the pro, it's a big deal, they remember that forever, they come back the next year like your best friends.
Well, it's a relationship game, and you make you know, like, and these gals, the ones that do it right and understand, they come back, you come back every year on circuit, you end up staying with them, they become as close as your family, right? You know, you're a week under their roof, you know. I mean, sure, if you go to the hotel room and you're just gonna sit there, you know, in that kind of bubble, it's, as we know, life's a whole lot better with you know, people around you. So
And I know I was in an event in New York on the Symetra Tour, which is great. I mean, and the one thing that they did years ago is they had the legends come out and play with the Symetra Tour players, and that was just like awesome. You know, with the, I mean, go to, you want to talk to somebody, talk to Michelle McGann, talk to Julie Inkster, you know, the people that were there, Beth Daniel, Meg Mallon, all those people. But it was so funny because I was at this event in Albany, New York, and we're in the pro-am. And this guy, one of the amateurs, was talking about this. I said, well, what do you do for a living? He goes, oh, I work for a printing company. I said, oh, really? Because we were in Albany, which is close. I'm originally from Massachusetts, so it was close to Massachusetts. He goes, yeah, I live in Mass, and I work for this printing company. He names the company Daniel's Printing. I looked at him and said, Daniel's Printing, huh? He goes, well, how do you know that? I said, my uncle owns it.
Yeah, I work there.
No, my uncle owned it.
Okay.
And I'm there like, my uncle's your boss. And he's there like, oh, my God, don't tell him I'm here. I said, you're safe. Don't worry. You know, I'm not going to put him on speed dial and say, hey, how you doing? One of your employees is out here playing golf.
What's the biggest difference from working at like a Symetra event? I've never been down on that tour.
You know, it's funny because when Charlotta retired, I went down to the Symetra Tour. And it was still the Symetra Tour. It was on its own. It was an individually run tournament. And then the LPGA came in and took it under the umbrella. Well, the funny thing is looking at it, it's a great tour, but they advertise it as the road to the LPGA. And I basically said, if this is the road to the LPGA, get a new contractor, because you're not even close. You know, and these girls, and that's what happened. I mean, if you look at it, unfortunately.
What, the quality is just not there?
Well, no, I mean, if you look at it, it's supposed to be the road. You're supposed to prepare them how to get there, okay? And the majority back then, you know, they would come out here to the LPGA, play a year in the back on Symetra, you know, because they couldn't, they didn't know, they had no clue when they came out here. They just weren't prepared to be able to step up. Now you're seeing.
So it's a feeder tour, but nothing else to prepare you, no logistics.
Back then, now they have. Now they have. Now you're looking at it saying, these people that come from the Symetra tour now, they're staying out here a few years.
Gotcha.
But back then it was like, you know, they would go and play and they wouldn't, you know, it was just, it was so different. You know, now it's kind of gotten a little bit closer. But it's like anything else. It's a developmental tour. You want to be able to get to the LPGA. Because, you know, I mean, I remember I had a young gal who had status on the LPGA, but she was playing Symetra in her first LPGA event. You know, as a matter of fact, it was at, I think it was at Jamie Farr. It was her first LPGA event. Now, the nice thing about it was she was from the Philippines, and we ended up getting paired with Rosales. And that was like her idol. Because she was from the Philippines, and here's her idol, and she's paired with her. Wow. I said, okay, let's go have fun. You know, I mean, let's have fun. I said, don't set your standards way high. I mean, just understand what's going on, you know. And then it's, you know, and one of the, prior to that, she had played in another LPGA event. She looked at me and was like, oh, my God, these girls hit it so far. I said, well, yeah.
They swing harder.
You know, they, yeah. You know, I mean, you're 4'2", you know, 100 pounds, and it's like, but.
Speaking of collaborating with the, you know, you said the Futures Tour and the Symetra Tour and just, you know, some of that crossover, I heard a rumor that there could be a crossover event with the men and the women next year on the schedule.
You know, they've been trying to do that for years. I mean, I think the thing that kind of set the stage for it, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's COVID. when they had the U.S. Open.
Oh, yeah,
remember
Pinehurst.
They played the same
back-to-back weeks. Michelle, we won for us.
You were
and
correct.
That was Michael Kam. No, Michael Kam was 2005. That was Charles Schwartzel, I think, won at Pinehurst. It was in Pinehurst.
Yeah, no, it was in, you're absolutely correct. But see, that was
great.
Like, that was
one week
like
after.
Right, 1 week after. So I think that kind of set a little bit.
They do the one in Australia.
And, yeah, but there, it's,
yes,
yeah, it's not like a
every
team
other
event.
Tea.
Of it's you know,
oh,
they're
yeah,
both there
talking.
On site, and it's every other tee, but you're playing practice round with the men and the women, and it is a really, really cool vibe. But
yeah.
This is, I heard, like a some sort of team.
No,
thing.
No, no. In all honesty, back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was a JCPenney mixed team event, and it was the LPGA and the PGA got together and they played, and they had a ball.
I bet.
And
I wonder,
and that's what you're talking about, the mixed team.
I know the LPGA is its own entity, but you know, the PGA owns, and you know, if COVID continues, like Mike Wan said, we can only last a year on our own. I'm sure the PGA would step in at some point. They've stepped in and bought every other tour up, but I just wonder how much different it would be if like the PGA tour owned the
LPGA.
Well, you know, and it's funny, you know, being around as long as I have, we had a commissioner that was on here after Charlie Meacham, who came out here for a little while, then went to the LPGA, and he was well-liked. And that's when the rumors really started coming out, saying the reason that he went there was to understand it so that the LPGA could merge, very similar to what they do in tennis.
Mm.
Okay, how the men and the women play together, and they do
mixed
all that
doubles
stuff.
And
they
what?
Have mixed doubles
sure.
And everything like that.
It'd
so.
Be great to see the LPGA. And the, I've always said the women can hold their own against the guys.
Well, you know, and it's funny. I mean, there again, I'll go back to Annika, you know, fantastic ambassador for the game. But she, you know, she wanted to understand about how men prepare for an event.
Mm.
That's why she played in that event. You know, it wasn't a publicity stunt. She had something in mind. And she wanted to go there and understand how men practice. And when she came back and put it into her routine, her career was already gone, but it just went to another level. You know, and I mean, it's... And it's a shame because, I mean, you know, back then, I mean, we had the, you know, the big three had Beth Daniel, Pat Bradley,
Vicky Hurst.
Beth Daniel, I mean, before Vicky Hurst and all that stuff.
All of the big names.
But, I mean, you know,
they were going way back.
Yeah, well, I'm saying, I'm going back to where you're talking about Beth Daniel, Betsy King,
Mickey Wright.
Well, Mickey Wright was there, but I mean, Pat Bradley, Beth Daniel, those two were really close and they would go at it. Jane Geddes was there, but there was, and then of course, then you had, back then you had, Annika and Kari Webb would go at it.
Sure.
I mean, they were like Tiger and Sergio. Okay.
But the women's game's missing a bit of a rivalry
right now, right? That's exactly what I'm getting at.
That mid 2000 range, you know, obviously we were all watching Tiger with Phil and VJ, and there was like, you know, David Duvall was mixed in there, and he had these people that were challenging him. And then, yeah, on the women's game, it was like Sorenstam and Webb, and like that was it. But now.
Well, Sorenstam, Webb, now throw in another one. See if you know.
You hit me, man.
How about you?
I'm gonna say Nancy Lopez back in the day.
Nope. You had Sorenstam.
Oh, Sarai Pack.
Nope. She was from Spain. Lorena Ochoa.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Mexico. She's from Mexico.
She just came in and went so hard and got out of Dodge. But
what the LPGA? It was funny, but I mean, you look at it because it was Sorenstam and Webb. Here comes little Lorena. Now you got Sorenstam, Webb, Lorena. Okay, so, I mean, you had the three, and they were going at it for years, and then there was another one that was even in there for a little bit by the name of Kelly Robbins, who was in there. So it was Webb, Robbins, Lorena, and Annika. So, I mean, you had it, and it was just like, and that would draw it.
But I think what the LPGA always has is that young teenager. Michelle Wee was right there. Lydia Ko was right there. She's only 23 years old, and she's won 15 times already.
And who's the other one?
Young girl out here?
Thompson.
Lexi Thompson was she was a teenager.
Yeah, 12 years old when she played in U.S. Open.
But again, all those players, they were so, and they're still so amazing and always in contention. But, like, you know,
There's no rivalry.
And then you really think, I mean, once again, I'm sorry to date myself, but the first really one that did that, gal by the name of Michelle McGann, came right out of high school. And she was the darling of the tour. I mean, you know, with all the, you know, all the hats and all that. But she came right out of high school and played.
It's like, when's the last time somebody stepped up and had over 5 wins in a season on the LPGA outside of, like, the Webb, Ochoa?
I'd say it was Lydia, probably the last one who won multiple times.
Multiple times, yeah. I mean, well, and it's funny because, I mean, I remember when Nancy Lopez won 5 times in a row.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was funny because she was coming into where I'm from, Hershey, Pennsylvania. She was coming in, and, I mean, what a draw.
That was in the 80s?
It was in the 80s, yeah. Yep, and it was unbelievable.
She's a great lady, though. She still comes out for some publicity here, and she does some teaching clinics on the LPGA, and the girls just love her, and she's very, very – she loves Augusta, too, which is coming up here pretty soon. Yeah.
And it's I mean, it was so funny because I think it was 2 years ago maybe, but we had an event in Indiana, I think it was, but she came out and gave a putting clinic. And it was like – my player was like, oh, my God, that's Nancy Lopez. You know, I've – seen her ever since I grew up, you know. And I said, well, come here.
Let me introduce you.
I said, give me your glove. I'll have her sign it, you know. And I, over there, you know, I'm there like, hey, Nancy. She goes, Jeff, how you doing? What's up? You know, she goes, my players are like, oh, my God, you know her? I said, yeah, she's, you know, she's great. I mean, she's a sweetheart.
Sure.
She signed the glove and gave it to her, and it was like she was in seventh heaven.
What kind of memorabilia do you hold at your house? Do you have anything special?
I do. I mean, it's funny. I was able to – we had an event that just said LPGA on the caddy bib. That's all it said, and it was blank. So I took it.
I got my first bib.
Well, I was just about to say, Ron, where's your first bib?
Well, no, here's this, though. I took it, and it said LPGA. Now, this is when the PGA show was huge, okay, where they used to have the players coming to the PGA show and all that stuff. So I took the bib down there, and I went around to all the LPGA Hall of Famers and had them sign it.
Wow.
Who was inducted at that time into the hall. I mean, I got Carol Mann. I got Judy Rankin.
Nice.
You know, and I got that on a thing. And, of course, I have my first player, Paige Dunlap. She signed one from Canada. As a matter of fact, that was one of the first ones. The Demure, I have the red vest that we had.
Where were you guys? Where did you play up there? Did it bounce around?
Toronto. Glen Abbey. Well, we would always play the east and then go out to the west because we went out to Calgary one time for the Stampede and all that stuff.
Cool.
But it was, I mean, that was a great event.
I still love it. I still see you wearing a bib, USGA, on the practice rounds. Where's that bib from?
Shh.
Not allowed to say. You kind of still break. That's memorabilia right there. I love it. No, love to see it.
We won't tag the USGA in this podcast.
Okay, thank you. I mean, it was funny. To be honest with you, it was at the U.S. Women's Senior Open.
Beautiful.
Okay, at Pinehurst.
Casey caddied there.
At Pinehurst.
I was Pine Maybe. Needles.
Pine Needles.
Pine Needles. Well, yeah, I'm sorry.
Same area.
I say Pine. I keep saying Pinehurst.
What a golf course. Oh, the LPGA is there in 2022.
Yeah, that was a great golf. Well, phenomenal. And it's so funny because years ago, back in the early, so once again, in the late 70s, we had a tournament there. We had a tournament there. We used to play there. But it was so funny. I walked in, you know, one day, and you know, I just was thrown to town. Nobody was around. It was like the next to the last day. Nobody was around. All these USGAs. I said, I don't think they'll miss it. Boom.
It's my Halloween costume this year. Put it out there right now. LPJ caddy.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, that was great. But I mean, and it's, you know, I mean, that first Women's Legends Senior Open was fantastic. I mean, that was just absolutely fantastic. I had a great opportunity to work with a gal by the name of Jan Stevenson. So
that was fun. There.
Well, and I mean, it was so funny because it was like we were playing with Jane Geddes and I think it was Kay Cockrell. Yeah, it was Kay Cockrell. And then, of course, when we did the I think it might have been PGA Senior Women's Open at French Lick. I think the PGA had something to do with that one. But I'm caddying for Charlotta Sorenstam, and we're paired with Helen Alfredson and Karen Stupples.
Oh,
and of course, I'm sitting there thinking, we're going to get, you know, we're going to be all over the camera because Karen Stupples works for the Golf Channel, and of course, she's paired with us, so they're going to be following us. And here it is, Helen Alfredson for 2 days, who ends up winning the tournament. So I'm like, hey, we're going to be on TV.
You had the galleries.
Karen Stupples, friend of the pod for all you listeners out there, episode 5 or 6, I can't remember. So
she's a sweetheart. I remember her when she first came out.
She's great at her job. She does a great job out there, analyst. I saw her. She was at the PGA last week.
Yep.
She jumps back and forth.
Yeah, she's great. I mean,
she's a great
commentator.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Judy Rankin is just
Judy's great. She's got the inside scoop on everything.
She gets out. She does her homework. I mean, she's out there talking to people and all that.
Do you still play the game?
I do. I still tee it up and every now and then. I have not moved up to the senior tees. I've still get the full course and underneath my belt.
They're just called the forward tees, man. You know, it's politically correct.
Yeah. It is the forward tees.
We call them the champions tees.
The champions tees. Okay, I understand that. Yeah, I still tee it up. I had a battle with that wonderful thing called vertigo, which David Duvall and Jason Day, I think, know very well. And it's different. I mean, it's like trying to play with that. And like when it hit, and they're like, okay, why can't I stand up? You know, and I have to go and explain to my player, trust me, I'm not drunk. You know, I just got vertigo. So, you know, I mean, if you see me kind
of
taking
side left or left or right or right to left.
And I just lean over to one side and say, okay, brain shake, hit the middle of the cup, will you? And if it goes in, pick it up. You know?
Do you have any wins out here, Jeff?
No, I do not. Not as a kid. Came close a couple of times. I mean, I've gotten.
Were you not with Carlotta when she won?
No, I was not.
Okay.
Nope. I was there, but I wasn't with her.
It's tough to win out here, huh?
How about the revolving doors with caddies? Though? Out here at this drive-on, there are so many different people. There was even people working the parking lot. I was with you, and you, a caddy rolled up on us, an African-American guy who works the parking lot. We had to explain to him, have you been tested? He said, what test is that?
Yeah.
And we said, are you in the bubble? He said, what bubble are you talking about? And he had no idea. But in the old days, they worked the parking lot. Nowadays, though, there is no loyalty to these caddies.
No, you don't. I mean, from one week or another, you can be, I mean, it's.
But you've been working this whole time.
Yeah.
How do you get it done?
Well, I would like to say, I guess, my reputation.
Sure, sure.
My professional ability. I mean, it's just.
You still enjoy it out there?
I love it. I mean, I love working with these gals, and it's great to see what's, you know, watch them progress. I mean, especially when I went to the Symetra Tour, and I had the good fortune of 1 year I had the number one, number two, and number three player on the money list that I had actually worked with. So, you know, I kind of feel like.
Have you ever thought about jumping in a men's league?
You know, I not really. I mean, it's funny. I guess back when the Nationwide Tour played, they had a tour stop in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and I got invited to play in a Pro-Am. So I was playing with this. Does that mean you need a beer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so Ron's closing to the fridge. Beer break. Do you need one, Jeff?
No, I'm fine. But we were playing at Hershey, and I got invited to play in the Pro-Am. And, you know, obviously we're teeing it up with one of the pros. So I said, hey, do you mind if I play back here with you? Well, I ended up beating the pro.
Wow.
So he looks at me and goes, like, you know this course, huh? I said, yeah. You know, I mean, I play it. I have a golf store across the street. He goes, well, what are you doing this weekend? I said, oh, I'm probably working. He goes, no, what are you doing this weekend? So he asked me to carry his bag, and we placed fifth.
Cool.
So I'm there like, okay. But
so you're a USGTF certified teaching pro from back in the day. I think, you know, I asked you that before the pod started. And just as a PGA of Canada member myself, could you clarify that for the listeners? What
you know,
that is
I mean,
exactly?
I mean, if you look at it, United States Golf Teachers Federation.
Gotcha.
The biggest thing is the teaching aspect of it. I was at a crossroads in my career where I already knew how to play. I could play. But what I wanted to try and do is understand how to teach somebody. And it's so funny because we had to do an oral exam. And, you know, the instructor came up to me and says, okay, I'm a left-handed player and I want to know how to play. Okay? And I just looked at him and said, okay, well, this is what I want you to do. I want you to take your top hand and put it here. I want you to take your bottom hand and put it here. I want your front foot here and your back foot here. And he goes, son of a bitch. He goes, you got me. Because he thought I was going to say, look, you know, what they used to say is look in a mirror. Everything I do is reversed. Well, I looked at it and said, I don't care if you're right-handed or left-handed. You have a top hand, you have a bottom hand. Your front foot is always pointed towards your target, so that's your front foot. Your back foot's always behind you. So it doesn't matter if you're left-handed or right-handed. And I used to, you know, when I did golf shows back in the day, and I would talk about it, I would say, how many left-handed people do we have in here? And they'd raise their hand. I said, how frustrated were you when you were paying money and they were talking about from a right-handed side, now reverse it, you know, to a left-handed player. And they said, yeah. So, well, how about if they told you top hand, bottom hand, back foot, front foot? And they all started clapping. Like, I can do that. I can stand up and visualize it. So it was just understanding that aspect of it.
So have you always, like, was there a stint there where you went down that road and you took a break from caddying and you actually went into, you know, more of the teaching, coaching side of things at, like, a club or an academy? Or
yeah,
like
I taught high school golf. I started a couple of golf programs. In high schools in Pennsylvania, and then I coached some college teams. I did some college teams and did that, and then...
What do you enjoy about coaching?
I just love, you know, taking people's talent, if you will, and fine-tuning them. Not trying to reinvent the wheel, but I would say, okay, you know, just get the confidence level up and be able to do that. And, I mean, the one team that I had, you know, I mean, they had their best record. And three of the players that I had their best year, you know, and then having them come up and say thank you, you know, and watching them go on. So, I mean, that's the – and same thing out here. You know, when I see people that you know, they've had their best rounds and I've been on their bag, might not have won a tournament, but we had the best rounds. I mean, I still remember that one in Corning when Charlotta shot 9 under the first day and Julie Inkster was coming to tee it up. And she was going in and we were coming out. And she looked at Charlotte and said, what the hell did you do? I'm 9 strokes behind and I haven't even teed it up yet. You know, and I'm there like, sorry, we had a good day, you know, and it's, but.
So what is it about, like, you know, you took your stint in coaching there and I'm sure you dab a little bit, you know, I'm in the same boat. I'm in the caddy ranks from, you know, a pretty successful coaching career at the moment, but like, what is it about caddying that kind of ultimately brings you back into doing that to be, you know, maybe the breadwinner?
You know, just understanding about what it takes to be a professional athlete, if you will. You know, what has to go into it, and the confidence level. And, I mean, you almost have to have a PhD in psychology to understand, you know. And I mean, the hardest thing to get over is a bad shot. And the famous quote is, the most difficult shot in golf is your second one. So if they hit one bad, you say, okay, you know, we can get up and down. Okay, we can knock it tight. You know, or I still look at some of these gals, you know, that they can knock it on in two, okay, and two putt for a birdie. We knock it on in three, and we're foot away and tap it in. Guess what? You're both putting down
same
four.
Score.
It's the same score. And, you know, I mean, you know, like you said about coaching, I think one of the things that happens a lot out here that I've seen is the overanalyzation of
just play golf.
Yeah.
Play golf.
Well, and I mean, understand that. I mean, like,
you're listening to people, sorry to interrupt, like Rory right now. All these guys are just, you know what? You know, Tiger got away from having swing coach. You're like, I'm just trying to get back to playing golf. You know what? I came out of here. I blew up the world. Both those examples, Rory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's take Lydia Ko in the women's game. Like, she came up just, you know, just playing golf, right? And destroying everything. And then, you know, the money, the dollars, the pressure, and the, trying to get better, trying to get your TrackMan numbers up. It's just like, you know, kind of like I was looking at our social media and the world's in disarray with, you know, mental health issues. It's just like, let's get back to the basics, you know?
Well, and I, you know, I still laugh, and I'll never forget that we were at one tournament. But back in the day, we didn't have all these gizmos.
Mm. Sure. No TrackMans.
No TrackMan, no nothing. No GPS system. The best thing we had was what's attached to our body, our feet.
What about the technology with clubs and balls and everything that?
You know, and I mean, it's so funny because my, you know, I grew up in the time of Persimmon Woods.
Sure, sure. Me too. Know?
And I mean, it was so funny because titanium came out and everybody was going with them, but I still kept a Persimmon Woodhead. And guys are telling me, they says, you got to change, you got to change. I said, why?
Favorite club in the bag.
Well, I said, why? I'm hitting the ball 310 yards with my Persimmon Wood. How far are you hitting with your titanium? You know? And I mean, I said, I'm not going to change until it finally.
And the
just
shafts kinda, go to graphite and everything.
You know, like, and I said, well, yeah. And it's funny because I mean, I played hockey for years. And I actually have a shaft. It's a thermoplastic. Well, that's what was in my hockey stick.
Did I hear a rumor you played professional hockey?
You did hear that. I played in the AHL for 12 years, and that's where I learned. You know, I mean,
back in the 80s, 79s,
it was actually, it was from 73 to 85 is when I played.
Do you believe in miracles? That was the era.
That was 1980. I had the good fortune of growing up with Mark Johnson, Jim Craig, Mike Arruzioni.
Arruzioni, he's a great golfer on his own. He plays still in the celebrity tournaments still.
Yeah, all those guys are good. I mean,
defenseman. What would
I was a forward. Right wing.
Yeah, okay.
Right wing.
Just looking at your size, man.
Oh, well, see, and that was the thing.
Hang back on the blue line.
It was, well, and see, you know, back then, I mean, I'm from Boston. I played in their organization, but there was a gentleman by the name of Derek Sanderson who was fantastic, and he taught me how to sweep check. He said, with your size, and put your stick out and get out there and let these people try and skate around you, good luck. You know, it's not going to happen. But it was, you know, back in the 70s and the Broad Street Bullies and all those guys, and it's great. We still get together. And we'll do a charity game, and we'll go out and play golf one day and then hockey the next.
You still lace them up?
I still lace them up.
Wow, good for
you. Still lace them up. But it's great. I mean, that's what we do now.
Sure.
We'll go out and play golf.
What'd you say to me, Ron? Keep running, jumping, and feeling?
That's
yeah,
right. That's right.
What you got to do.
Climbing the trees, jumping the fences, whatever age you are. Keep it
and
going.
I think you guys would probably see it too, but it's funny when you're walking the fairways with these gals, you know, and they're talking, you know, well, how old are you? Well, I'm 22.
I'm
23.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, I'm saying, all right, 21 or 22 and 23, let's see, that's 45. I look at them and say, gals, I still got you beat, and I'll keep up with me. It's like, you know, and they're looking at me like, huh? And I said,
what about your yardage books nowadays compared to the old school?
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean.
And the greens books.
It is. See, I mean.
Where do you stand?
The greens book, I still say, and this is one of the things that they taught me at USGTF, your best thing is your feet. You know, I mean, walk the green.
Do you go out there and feel it with your feet like they do?
Absolutely. I mean, walk the green. You can find out the
terrain. Well, what's that little thing called?
Well, that's aim point, but just let me finish this point here. Like, Ron, I hate the greens books. I think, you know, when they changed the rules of golf a couple of years ago, like, and you can't stand behind your player, et cetera, all good stuff, but isn't reading the green, like, the most purest, you know, like, skill out there? And talking of, you know, my player, I picked up a new bag this week just for the week. I'm like, oh, do you get a greens book? And she's like, oh, there are no greens books this week.
Oh, wow. I bet not. Yeah. Nobody's been here.
Well, and the reason being is this was a replacement.
Sure, but how awesome is that? I said, great.
That's great.
Yeah. Pace of play all of a sudden. Nobody's, you know, kind of like a level playing field. And, you know, Jeff with his feet out there. But I think they should be banned. So, anyway, back to your thoughts.
I agree. I agree totally because, I mean, back in the day, I mean, we would literally walk the course. And we thought it was great when we got these little walkie-talkies and attached them to our belt buckle. And one guy would go out and we'd talk to him and say, where you at? Okay, I'm standing behind the tee. Well, I'm at the 150-yard marker. Okay, well, you paced it off. How far is it?
150-yard marker. That's all I ever knew. Sorry. That's all I ever knew. Yeah, now there's everything.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, they're out there and they're doing that. And I'll never forget because it was a
juniper bush, 150 yards.
Exactly.
That was it.
Exactly.
So but, what about the yardage books and stuff then?
They were the same thing. I mean, it was funny. There was a gentleman named, you might know him, George Lucas. was one of the first people that did yardage books.
And then he went on to make Star Wars?
The other George Lucas? The other guy.
His younger brother.
Gorgeous George. I'm sorry.
Gorgeous George.
But he used to do, and I mean, and it's so funny because there was, he would put stuff in there like, just in case you, so it'd be J-I-U-F. And he put it in there.
Just in case you.
You know the last couple of words.
I'm not saying it.
But the players would look at it and go, what does this mean? And they're like, you don't want to know. You know, I mean, here's the yardage, though. Just in case you do this, you know, but we'd have that in the yardage book. But it was funny. Like he was saying, I mean, it would be to 150-yard mark or a sprinkler head. You know, this was back when they had sprinkler heads with numbers on them. You know, now they don't anymore. They just have sprinkler heads because everybody has these GPSs and they're just hitting it anyway. So
soon everybody will be able to use a GPS. I know you can use them on practice rounds.
Well, and Symmetra, you can use them during tournament rounds.
Oh, really?
Yep. They just started
the
that
web,
this year.
Or the nationwide, whatever it's called.
Corn Ferry?
I think as long as there's a mandatory caddy out there, they won't do that. You know, they got to give us something to do. But, you know, Symmetra's not mandatory, right?
No, it's not mandatory, but you can use it.
For
you
sure. But as long as, like, a Corn Ferry or something, like, as long as, you know, there's a mandatory caddy, I couldn't imagine they're going to they're going to be purist to some degree.
Yeah, because, see, then you always get replaced by that guy by the name of Bushnell.
Yeah, right.
Bushnell is taking our jobs, you know.
There's another dying industry, right? And it is actually a dying industry. I'm like super new. You know, I'm on my second year here. You're on your 35th year or whatever plus. And you know, I look at it as a dying industry is because you know everybody's always ultimately trying to get to the men's tour, the ultimate goal. But the money's so big now, and that they kind of just bring somebody comfortable for them, right? Like, it's like, okay, you're my best friend, you're my brother, you can learn caddying, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You can. It's a learned skill for sure.
It is. Yeah, I would agree with you. And I mean, I think you were talking about money. I still remember, I'll go back years ago, talking about the disparity between the LPGA and the PGA, okay? There was a tournament that the LPGA was playing. The total purse was $200,000. The PGA played an event. Guy made the cut, came in dead last. He made $200,000. So it was like the disparity of, and I'll never forget the Betsy King, great gal. She had a tournament, and the publicity for it was she had this billboard that said the definition of mass confusion, 144 women battling for one purse.
Like, that's a good one. One purse.
Yeah, one purse.
I like that.
It was like I saw this.
Play
and I
on
thought,
words.
This is, yeah, I said this is great, you know. But that's
we're getting closer though. We got 75 million. We had 75 million in the bank for 2020 for the women's tour this year, which is up 5 million from last year. We are gaining. We're in our 71st year. The LPGA
$1 million winners.
Million 1.5. Say young Kim last year at the CME, she got 1.5 million. This year it's back to 1 million for the winner. Next year it'll be back up to 1.5.
Right.
But they're gaining on it, and we are getting some TV publicity. We are nationwide, 130 countries. They broadcast the LPGA, and so we are global, probably more so than the men, I would think.
Oh, no question on that. Yeah. I would, no doubt. Like I said, when it first
started. Our Asian players are rock stars when they go back home.
I'd 100% argue that point to you guys. Like, there's no way the women's golf is broadcasted further and more extensive than the men's.
I don't think the men show up in Beijing.
I lived in China for a year.
And you had the men's tour.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, they had it. But, yeah, I mean, did they get the television, though?
Oh, it's there. I mean, it's the
well, they call it
that.
Is it called? I mean, European Tour, I know, gets a lot of publicity on the Golf Channel.
Yeah, no, you can get it all everywhere, but the men's is, I mean, there's a reason why the money's so big.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh,
follow the dollars, man.
Oh, no,
follow,
I mean, now here's a funny story. For years, the PGA played at King's Mill in Williamsburg, Virginia. It was called the Anheuser-Busch, okay? Well, when they stopped, okay, I happened to be in a group with one of the marketing people from Anheuser-Busch. And I said, you know, we really love that tournament. I said, well, you know who you might want to talk to? Go talk to the LPGA. And they go, why? I says, because you're not going to have to put up $6 or $7 million. You can put up, you know, a quarter of that and have an event. And they jumped on it.
100%.
They jumped on it. They said, well, what the heck? We've already got it established. We're playing the same golf course. And they saved a lot of money. And that tournament is still run. Now it's not sponsored by Anheuser-Busch anymore. But back then, it was like, you know, I mean, that was
Kings Mill is a beautiful resort.
Oh, that was great, and it's
right on the water.
Now, here's a real funny story. This is a trip. Once again, I was caddying for Charlotte. We're playing in the pro-am, and I was out walking the course prior, and I ran into the director of security for Kings Mill. Okay, so I'm talking to him, and he said, like, if you need anything, I mean, great guy to know, you know, the director of security. If you need anything, just let me know. And I'm there like, oh, great, you know. So we're walking down this one hole, and he says, okay, I'm going to tell you a little history. See that house? I think it was the 13th hole, and it was a house up to the left-hand side. He said, I'll tell you some history about that. Do you know who lives there? I said, I don't have a clue. He says, you ever know, ever hear of John Hinckley?
Oh,
said,
my.
Oh, yeah, I know John. His grandmother lived there.
Oh, wow.
And that is where he would go when he got released on time to come home. He was telling me, he said, we hated it because when Hinckley came in, we had to shut everything down. And, you know, he was there. And I'm there like, okay, you know, very good. So we're doing a practice run. I told Charlotte, I said, do me a favor. Hit one up the left-hand side. I said, hit one up the left-hand side. She goes, I'll tell you later. You know, so we're walking up. I said, see that house? She goes, what was there? I said, you know, Ronald Reagan, the guy to try to shoot them, Hinckley, he lives there. She goes, well, why'd you want me to hit it over here? I said, I just wanted to show you. So well, don't do it during the tournament.
Well, great stories, great stories. And going back, switching gears a little bit, sure. Coaching, going forward with coaching. How do you see coaching going forward?
You know, I mean, it's funny. There's a new platform that's coming out there. It's called MyVCoach, MyVCoach.net. It's going to launch Friday the 23rd, but it's virtual. It's basically having the ability to tape your swing and get it on a platform where coaches and
we seen an ad on TV last night.
Okay,
exactly for that. Okay. People coaching from home or coaching virtually, and the players.
Sure,
are,
but that was not. That, yeah, no. Similar. Somebody was behind that though. It was what's his face? He's the biggest guy on Golf Channel.
Ledbetter?
No. Analyst. Always hammering Tiger. Why am I brain farting?
Oh my gosh. I know
Chambly?
Yes. Okay. Brandel Chambly.
I had to go through ABC. Once I got to see it, said Chambly, hammering Tiger. Thanks for the. Yeah.
Sure. So yeah. You got. So this is your.
We're jumping right in there.
We're cognizant of your time, and it's starting to heat up in here pretty good.
No. I appreciate the time.
You're it's one of the best storytellers on tour, so we're loving this. But yeah, into your.
Into the video. Virtual.
Yeah. I mean, it's a platform that's out there, but it gives the opportunity for individuals to not only have their swing analyzed, but another thing that we're going to do is having the ability to, if you go to a golf course, you can get in touch with like a caddy who's on the virtual platform and have him walk you through the course. How would I play the course?
Oh, wow.
So who analyzes the swing? So you upload your swing and just one of your team, like one of the team members is there.
Right, who's certified, sure. Who's a certified coach or a PGA.
And they get back to the player with drills and, you know.
Yep. And the PGA player or the LPGA player or anybody like that, they can charge for their time to say, you know, you want me to analyze it? Okay, here's what it's going to cost you to have me to analyze it. So they're getting compensated
so
for
people
it.
Can, so like accredited people, like let's just throw out a name back here, even though they're not your player that you work for, could be like, I'm going to be on this app and people can, I'll give them advice, you know.
You're exactly correct. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly correct. Okay. And then, like I said, the ability to look at a golf course and how to manage a golf course from a caddy's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, I mean, get some caddies to take a look at it and say, okay, how do I attack this hole? Okay. Well, you know, you got trouble on the right-hand side. So you want to go up the left center and then, you know, what to do. And, you know, if it's 150 yards to the pin, okay, that's the distance to the pin. You don't, you know, unless you're going to slam dunk it, you're going to say, okay, let's look at the terrain of the green where there might be, you know, 5 yards on the green. It's going to roll out another 5 yards. So if it's 150, you're going to say, all right, hit it 145 and watch it roll, you know, and get as close as you can to
so
the
So your club golfer is kind of your target looking at this?
Yeah, you're like, looking at that. You're looking at that.
Sure,
or, you know,
sure.
You know what I mean? The way the game is getting right now, too, with all the amateur events that are going on, we're going to have the good fortune of there's a tournament that's going to be going on down in Harbortown at, not the Harbortown course, the other one, Heritage Hills, I think it is, at Harbortown. It's called Elite Invitational, where they're going to have 144 junior players out there. So we're going to talk to them about, you know, this is how you prep for a round. This is what you do. What do you do when you prep? So it's all on the different types of platform. And not only that, it's not only in golf, but it's in everything. You know, I mean, it's virtual, what's going on now, where you can you know, if you want to learn about business or learn about anything else, it's going to be there. So
what's the name of it again?
It's called myvcoach.net.
And we will 100% link that in the show notes for all the people listening. And I just kind of got one more question. I don't know how Ronnie's doing over there. Are you feeling good, Ronnie?
Yeah, I got a couple more questions.
Cool. What do you see the future of golf caddying, professional caddying? What's next?
You know, I mean, it's so funny because I remember, like I said, back in the 60s and all that, you used to have caddies. But then people looked at it and said, okay, well, I can make more money by getting carts. So caddies got phased out. They're not there anymore. And, I mean, I truly think that if they would get back to the, quote, old days and create a caddy program where people – because, I mean, it really matures individuals. Mm. It really does. I mean, that's maybe my opinion.
I don't know the answer to. Is Augusta allow carts out there? There's no carts. It's all caddies.
It's all caddies.
Pinehurst has carts, but you have to keep them in the trees. I know that.
Correct. And it's so funny because we played – it was funny. We played the Country Club of Chicago at the first Women's U.S. Open, okay? And I'm out there with a couple of veteran caddies that I've known. You know, we had a blast. We're out there walking around. We get maybe into, like, 8 or 9 holes, and the guy looks around and he goes, you know what? There's no cart pass here. I said, yeah, because they don't have carts. They only have caddies. So they don't have
cart pass.
I mean, he's looking around and he goes, that's a good point. I didn't think of that.
Well, it's a money generator. And I, you know, one of probably the most unique things that I've ever experienced is I've been all over the world as a golf coach. You know, I went through my 20s trying to gain as much experience, and I just love travel. So I spent some time in New Zealand actually working for Tim Wilkinson, been on the PGA Tour for more than a decade, his coach, Andre White. And we were at I was at his club, Manawatu Golf Club. And there was around 800 to 1,000 members, and we only had 5 golf carts.
Yeah.
Everybody walked. You better have a disability. There was a 90-year-old member who walked the golf course once a week. It was just like old school culture. I'm sure it's maybe similar in Scotland, the birthplace. I've never really been over there, but you know, America's just, you know, come in with that, you know, the carts, the alcohol, the era, the tunes, the hot dogs, you know, like and that's just kind of what the culture is now, right? But so I thought it was one of the coolest things, and this is, you know, 2010, so, you know, 10 years ago, and just I was blown away.
I mean, you know, to put a finger on it, what is the future? I mean, I hope it stays there.
Professional caddying.
Do.
The future of professional caddying was my
question. I, you know, I mean, it's if people want
to
make
stay.
Yeah, it has to
well,
stay.
Well, no, I know that, but do you see any, like, you know, anything different?
Well, GPS.
Or?
I mean, the GPS system, but still, if you get back to the old school and use the GPS as kind of a buttress to what you're so used to doing, you know, I mean, you're still looking at it saying, okay, you know, I'm going to walk off and just make sure that this number is correct. If I walk between the sprinkler heads, all right, I'm going to GPS it and it says, okay, 160. If I walk up 10 yards, it should be 150. And if I have another sprinkler head and I look at the yardage book and it says 150, my feet say 150, okay, I'm going to believe my feet before I believe a satellite that's floating around in space without the Russians interfering with it. Sorry, Russia. But, you know, but at any rate, I mean, it's the future of it, I think, is going to be there. And, I mean, it's a – over the years, you've seen it because, like I said earlier, you know, back when Callaway did some stuff for the caddies to help them out a little bit, and it was very good. And you know, you had hotels that would step up and say, hey, you know what? If you're coming back here every year, we're going to put our hotel up for you and let you have a good deal. Because now you're looking at it, I mean, it's like, my God, you know, you've got to, you know, we're paying for it. I mean, the caddies nowadays, are their expenses, and that's something that,
trading dollars.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and God love the players, but I don't think they really know what we have to do. I mean, they get meals and all that. I mean, back in the days, they got meals and they got everything, and we're out there, you know, throwing in. God bless Dream On for giving us what they're doing this week. They've been great. But, and so now it's, you know, most of the places we go to do feed us, and that's very nice.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I've been privy to some of the dining with the players and sitting, breaking bread with players at the same table, rubbing elbows. Yeah. For a fan like me is something else.
No,
but I remember, I know the stories of the old caddy days. Yeah. You weren't allowed in the clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly.
You were just sitting out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
You were nobody.
I mean, has it come a long way? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
It has.
Oh, yeah.
It has. But, I mean, from a business standpoint to it, you know, I mean – you just don't see it anymore.
Can you make a living out here as a caddy if your girl's not producing?
It'd be hard.
Trading dollars.
It'd be hard. It'd be hard. Yeah. I mean, you almost
be in the top 50. Your girl needs to be top 50. You know,
on the women's tour is tough.
Yeah, and then you're looking at, I mean, during the off season,
sure,
you're going to work because that's where you're going to make the money to be able to go and do the 8 or 9 months.
Well, the players used to have to have a second job back in the day.
Back in the day, they did. They did. They had to have that second job.
It's like the Canadian Football League.
Well, nothing but great stories. Nothing but great stories. We appreciate you hanging out with us.
Love it. I love what
you
guys
are doing. Let's Talk Divots. We love it, man.
No, I mean, I appreciate what you folks are doing from the media standpoint. It's very good.
Awesome. Yeah. No.
I had one more question. You wear a prominent ring there. Is that a college, high school? What is that?
That is my college ring that I did. It's
very proud of it.
It's a small college outside of this place called Penn State.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, okay. Well,
yeah, a little football team.
Yeah, well, we're down the road from it. And the nice thing about it is that back in the day, I actually created the Pennsylvania State Collegiate Ice Hockey Program.
Oh, so good. You can hang your hat on that.
Yeah, well, I did. And, I mean, we used to mop up on Penn State, and now Penn State's ranked in the nation. But I started their program back in 1974.
You still live back in Philadelphia?
I live outside of Hershey right now.
Hershey, Pennsylvania,
but
okay.
I still call New England home, and I can always yell four. I park your car. You know, I mean, I park the car, and I give them a quarter.
All right, man. It looked like you worked hard to get rid of that one.
Well, good for you for staying the test of time and being out here, man. You got a lot of good stories. A lot of guys respect you out here. I've talked to quite a few people who know you, and it's nothing but good stuff.
How many more years you got?
What's your future like?
Well, until these legs no longer count correctly, I'm going to keep going.
All right. Love it. Thanks so much for having coming on the show. Jeff DeCohen, everybody. And once again, listeners, we are at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms. And go ahead, give us a like, give us a share, give us a comment. And we are letstalkdivots@gmail.com if you want to send us an email. And we're going to just continue to get more guests and bring you the info. So much love to y'all.